Who are you? Who am I? But who are you?
Find out on this episode of the Crosswalk Podcast as we dive into identity. All right, guys. Well, like we said, man, today we're going to dive into a kind of a heavy one, a big one that I was a little bit nervous about. So, again, thanks for tuning in. This is the Crosswalk Podcast. I'm Chuck. This is Caleb. And today we want to dive into identity.
Can we add like the dun dun dun?
I feel like we need to edit that in there, but like some kind of ominous, like.
Yes.
Because that's a big one. Now here's the deal. If you get offended by anything we say, we love you still.
Yeah.
Okay. I hope you love us still. Like we're not out to offend anybody, but what happens is, and even for me, you know, somebody who obviously most of the time I agree with my own views. Most of the time I try to agree with myself, but even I, some of the views that I have lead me to places where I come across things that I look at and I'm offended. So like when I'm reading scriptures about identity, when I'm reading the scriptures and understanding who I'm supposed to be as a follower of Jesus, even I'm offended at times. And if you're never offended by the scriptures, you're probably not reading them right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, this is kind of
a hush hush subject for a lot of places. And that's, when we first kind of brought up the topic of identity, we was kind of like, oh man, is this really something we want to dive into? And then, that obviously was a yes. We need to talk about this because the whole point of us starting the podcast is because we wanted raw and honest conversations.
Yes. Honest, raw conversations about topics that maybe other people were afraid to, that maybe we didn't feel like we had the good opportunity to always have those conversations.
Well, and
with
that
folks.
We're afraid to. I mean, it's not easy to talk about some of these things, especially because, I mean, there's sometimes you get
when
some
did
backlash.
Tell them, when did I text you and say, I don't feel ready?
Like today?
Last night. Last night I text Caleb. I'm like, I don't know that I feel ready for us to get on there and talk about identity just yet. I feel like I needed to study more and read more and kind of formulate thoughts more. But it's definitely, I feel like there's a couple of kind of communities, I guess you could call them, communities where I would feel like people would get, they're not afraid to talk about it. And that's going to be kind of your more what people, and some of them even label themselves as progressive Christianity. All about talking about identity, and you be who you are, and you be you, and you do you, and you do this and that, even to the point of, well, maybe Jesus really didn't mean this when he says, take up your cross and follow me.
Yeah.
Maybe Jesus, here's what Jesus really meant when he said, die to yourself. And they kind of twist things around.
Which is kind of cool, because I'd seen a thing the other day that was talking about progressive Christianity. I think it's funny that you brought that up, because really, we're not diving into the progressive Christianity, but
no, we'll probably do that later.
But yeah, we will. Yeah, but identity is like such a big motivating factor for the progressive church, and so it's kind of hard not to talk about that. But I'd seen a thing that was really cool the other day, and they was talking about, you know, progressive Christians where they've got it wrong, and we talk about this a lot on the podcast. Is that Jesus said the first commandment was to love the Lord, the God, the Father with all the heart, soul, strength, and mind, and then before the guy could even ask the second, he said, and the second, it's to love your neighbor just as I've loved you, okay? And what they were saying is that, which I thought this was really interesting, is that progressive Christians have kind of got those two switched around. Is that, okay, well, first commandment, the first thing I need to do before anything else is I got to love people. I got to love them exactly how they are. I got to love them for exactly whoever they want to be. I got to love them no matter what. Even if it, you know, even if it makes me not present the gospel to them, even if it makes me not want to promote their sin to them or try to help them, hold them accountable. At all costs, my first priority is the comfort of other people. And then secondly,
and that's
God.
What it is. That's what it amounts to, is we confuse, and it's easy to do. Parents do it. I do it sometimes. It's easy to confuse somebody else's temporary happiness with me loving them. If I'm going to cause them discomfort, if I'm going to do something that, in the moment seems like harm, I'm not loving them. But I would push back on that, and I would kind of say, you know what, if you are, there's a quote that I've heard before, if you're all truth and no love, that's brutality.
Yeah.
Like you're just beating somebody over the head with the truth. That's abuse. I would also argue it's a bit abusive in the long term. It's not going to feel like abuse to the person in the beginning, but in the long run, you're going to cripple them for life if you're all love and no truth.
Exactly. And so that's really kind of what we're trying to get at is like, how do we navigate around identity? Because it's not something, it's something we have to talk about, because that is just, that is a generational thing, that this, that's a societal thing that is, we've built society and culture on. And it's not something as a church that we can just sit back and just, oh, well, I'm not going to dive into that. You know, that's probably going to offend some people. Some people's not going to agree with the way I look at that. So we're just going to, you know, be hush-hush about it. It's like, no.
And right, I feel like it's one extreme or the other. Either we don't talk about it, or it's in your face. I'm posting offensive things on social media that I know are going to trigger folks. So I want to look at you guys, if you are watching or listening right now, I want to look at you for a moment and say that this is all, this is our prayer that before we started this, that this would all be from a place of love, and that we would be, we would follow Jesus' example in the fullness of grace and the fullness of truth. That we come at this from an angle of, we love you enough to tell you the truth, do so in a loving fashion and in a way that we're just presenting and we're not bashing anybody.
Mm-hmm. And to be even more clear about that is that some people, a lot of times you'll see people get on the podcast or get on our YouTube channel and start watching. They'll get a couple minutes into it, hear something they don't like, and then they'll jump on off. And so that's the reason why I want to go ahead and clarify this too. Obviously, when we talk about identity issues, the first thing that comes in a lot of people's mind is homosexuality.
Yes, sexual identity. Because
is your sexual identity.
We're going to talk about that in a minute, is because our concept of identity as a culture has been sexualized in the last several
decades.
But
I just want to be clear that, yes, we will be discussing that, and yes, that is a big part of this. But at the same time, identity comes in many different forms than just your just homosexuals or just the, you know, the LGBT, you know, community or whatever the case may be. It comes in a lot more forms than just your sexuality.
Yes.
Identity comes in many different forms, and we're going to be hitting different ones of those forms. So it's not just us getting on here just to preach against homosexuality or whatever the case may be. There's many different factors of identity, and we want to hit on some of the different ones. Yes, that is in there, but just to be clear, you guys need to watch
all the way through. And we're also not going in this episode, not going into the details biblically of a case why homosexual acts, homosexual behaviors, the actions are wrong.
No.
We may address that in the future. But there's a lot of other, I encourage you, there's a lot of other podcasts, a lot of other videos out there that have biblically very well addressed that. So,
yeah, and if we can find some of those, we might even link them.
We might even link them, yeah. We might even link them and stuff. So. Well, we kind of want to give a little background first. So we got to understand when we're talking about identity, people come to it with different ideas. People come with their own idea of what does it mean, identity. And in our culture, I think we could all agree that if we, maybe you've not heard it formalized this way, maybe you've not heard it like formally said in this fashion, but I think our idea of identity is who I feel like most on the inside.
Right.
As a culture, that's kind of our sense of what we think of when we hear the word identity. But what the scriptures really point to is something different, and what prior generations, even in America, their sense of identity and things was a bit different than that. It wasn't, oh, it's all about what I feel inside. They were more willing to submit to this idea of, you know, a lot of external factors go into my identity.
Mm-hmm.
And externally, a lot of things in culture, even in society, and there's a, for previous generations, there is a place for conforming a bit to culture, to society, to what are seen as good principles, good ideals, and saying, okay, if I myself am pushing against these things, then I need to probably change and course correct a bit. Nowadays, we do the exact opposite. We say, well, if society is pushing something against you that you feel like is not a part of who you are, then shame on society.
Mm-hmm.
Cancel it. Get rid of it. Like,
right,
do
right.
away with it. Throw off the shackles of that. You do you. You be you, whoever you are meant to be. And
goes beyond that. It's even, if you even think it, if you even remotely, you know, because we were talking about this earlier, it's not just the fact of like, oh, I'm going to publicly announce that I disagree with this. I'm going to publicly make a statement, or I'm going to post stuff on social media, whatever the case may be. It's, oh, if I find out that you have like secretly told somebody who told somebody who told somebody, whatever the case may be, if I find out that somehow, even though you've showed me love, even though you've done nothing but support me or whatever the case may be, if I find out that reality in your head, your morals disagree with that, I'm canceling you. Like, you're
need to be gone. And so And we were discussing that earlier this morning, we met for breakfast, and we were talking about that, and it's like, okay, so I decide, here's my set of beliefs, here's what I believe about this subject, and you haven't even verbalized it to me yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or you've definitely, maybe you have, but it's in a very calm manner. It's in a good conversation. We're drinking coffee or something. We're good friends. We've been friends for a while, and all of a sudden I find out that you have a difference of opinion than I do on what I consider to be a bedrock principle or a bedrock belief, a core belief or whatever. And now all of a sudden I'm like, oh man, friendship's over.
Yeah, it's done.
Like, I'm done. I'm washing my hands of you. I'm done. We're gone. You know, I've seen it happen. I've seen people that they find out, oh man, somebody, and not that I can necessarily apologize for everybody, because I don't represent everybody, but I apologize for Christians for a moment, a little bit, okay? And and for myself at times, because there are people out there, and if you've been hurt by Christians, if you're upset about Christianity, if you're upset by Christians or what, you know, everything, please remember, they're people too, okay? And that's what we're going to get into and talk about identity. You know, their core identity is no longer pure sinner. But unfortunately, we still have old thought patterns. We still have old habits. We still have the flesh that we're still kind of fighting against a bit, that we're trying to renew our mind and get out of those things. And so we're going to make mistakes. We're going to mess up. So if you've been hurt by Christians, you know, you do the hard work. You be the big person, too, of trying to forgive them. And they need to also admit wrong, you know, when they've been wrong. But what we do is we do this as churches. We find out somebody has a different belief. Oh, they're on the foundational doctrines of Christianity, that Jesus really is God, that he is the Son of God, that he is deity, right? Which is a big thing, like progressive Christianity, in some circles of progressive Christianity, which isn't even really always true biblical Christianity, almost to the point of even saying that Jesus was just a morally good person.
Right, yeah.
Somebody to be emulated, but not somebody to be worshipped. Okay, we disagree with that, but you take churches that agree on, oh man, yeah, Jesus is absolutely the Son of God. Jesus is the only way to the Father. Jesus died a substitutionary death after living a perfect, sinless life for you, for the world, and he is, you know, he rose again. He was resurrected 3 days later as the proof of everything that he said. We agree on those things, but then all of a sudden we find out they have a difference of opinion on the tribulation that, you know, you read about in Revelation and stuff, or they have a difference of opinion on you know, some of the things I've heard people talk about, you know, different gifts of the Spirit, speaking in tongues, or this, that, or whatever. And so it's like all of a sudden we find out we have a difference of opinion. We're like, oh man, well, there goes that. I can't work with those people anymore. You know, like we can't have fun with them. So sorry, I'm distracted. One of our lights is flickering. I think we're losing battery.
That's okay though. But no, I totally agree. And we'd actually talked about this a little bit earlier this morning. When we was talking about recently, we had started up a TikTok page, and which
I gotta say, I show my age here, okay? So if you're younger than me and you're watching this, I loathed, still do kind of TikTok. Okay,
dude, I'm 10 years younger than you, and I loathe TikTok.
I don't like TikTok. I wasn't into it. You know, like the idea of short, fun video. I mean, I have nothing wrong with that. I mean, I remember, I'm showing my age again a little bit here. Again, I'm only 30, so I'm not old or anything, but like Vine. Remember Vine, dude, video? Vine, you know, yeah, like you got kids great. Nowadays, like, what's Vine? I'm like, that was TikTok before there was TikTok, you know, but you know, there's just short, funny video. Like, cool. Like, that's fine. But now, you know, you can make up to 60-second videos on TikTok and things, and you can. You can, if you're younger than me, again, you know all about it. You know more than I do, but you can, you know, you can put words in it, text over top of it, emoji. You can do all kinds of things to these videos natively in this app. And so it's like you were talking about.
That's the thing. It's hard to navigate that, not knowing. I mean, that's kind of a foreign concept. I mean, I'm only 22, and that is still even like for me. I'm like, man, because I know Instagram and Facebook, and I can run some social media aspects of that. But when it comes to TikTok, man, it's like a different monster, even to me.
Well, because the younger kids get more grace with it. Like, if you're younger and you're just figuring it out, and your videos look stupid or dumb or whatever, like, everybody's like, oh, it's like a little kid. But when we're trying to get on there and figure it out, if we don't put something that actually looks like it belongs, we're like, oh, these dudes are idiots.
They dumb, man. But no, we've been trying to navigate that, and so it's just been very interesting to see, because you know that there's conflicts between churches, and there's rivalries, and there's, you know, people being diversified through churches. But man, you get on TikTok, and I've been scrolling down through there, and
people
get
divided, real fast.
Hashtag, Christian TikTok community or whatever it is. And you go down through there, and once you get accepted the Christian TikTok, okay, and all your TikToks are Christian, and you're scrolling down through there, and it's just like, man, it's like, nope, like, I see less and less about, oh man, God is so good, God is so great, mm-hmm. God's love, let's go. And you see more about, oh well, you should practice the Sabbath on a Saturday, or you should believe in pre-tribulation, you should be in post-tribulation. If not, you're going to hell, you're a sinner, you're on the wrong path, you should believe in this or that. And it's like all these different Christians trying to tug in different ways. I'm like, man, that what kind of message does that send to people? And I know that we talked about that many, many times on the podcast before. And so I know that it at first glance can be like, well, what does that have to do with identity? But in actuality, identity is the pacemaker for your purpose. Identity is a pacemaker for the direction of your life or your church or whatever the case may be. Whatever your identity is, the things in your life follow that. Okay, and so if we have our identity not in check, then all of a sudden we're going to be on TikTok and we're going to be out there preaching about how, oh, okay, well, you're not saved if you don't uphold the Sabbath on a Saturday or a Monday mm-hmm. or whatever day you think it is. When in actuality, that holds no actual what we know to be absolute true in the gospel,
yes.
Which is just irrelevant. And those are opinions. We have the freedom to express those opinions. We talked about that. But it does actually come back to our identities, because that's the basis of
every time.
Everything.
Every time. And I even look, I mean, it's not a one-to-one correlation, but I even look at like inanimate objects, things that we use in our everyday life. Like I'm looking at that phone right there. Okay, if somebody's like, hey, let me use that as a paperweight. All right, cool. Like, it'll make a good paperweight. But if somebody's...
No, Chuck, you can't do that.
But if somebody's like, hey, we're going to use that as a football. All right, it's probably not the best idea to throw that phone around like it's a football, or to try to bounce it or something. And so it has a purpose mm-hmm. because of what it is.
You're right.
Because of, and this is a big fancy word here, teleology. Okay? Hmm. I mean, like, we explain things in terms of what their purpose is. And their end purpose. Well, the end purpose of that phone, it was actually designed to be a communication device mm-hmm. / computer. Because, nowadays. So if I'm trying to use it for something outside, if I'm trying to use that phone over there to spread peanut butter on a sandwich, it might work, but things are going to get really messy, and it's going to be bad, and it's just not going to be a good idea. And, the same with people. Again, not a one-to-one correlation, right? You obviously have an infinitely greater purpose than a phone.
Yeah.
But the idea is the same, that a person has been created in the image of God for mm-hmm. a specific purpose. And their purpose is related to the identity that God gives them, okay? The identity of that object is a phone, a communication device, and it does a specific thing. The same with a person. God has given you an identity. Now, everybody is made in the image of God, whether they are a follower of Jesus or not, whether they have, accepted his gift, free gift of salvation, which again, I mean, the whole point of the podcast is to have raw, honest conversations and get the gospel out, mm-hmm. And so the plain truth of the matter is God created humanity. I believe, and again, Caleb shares his beliefs, in a literal understanding of Genesis,
right,
that God created Adam and Eve, and that was the beginning of all humanity. They sinned and messed it up. They sinned, and our sin, God describes him in the scriptures as a consuming fire. His presence is so perfect and so pure and so holy that sin cannot exist in his presence.
Yeah.
And if we were left in our completely unsinful state, and we would be undone, just completely undone in his presence in our sinful state. And so God, banishes them from the garden, and he promises that he's going to make a way to fix what humanity has messed up. Well, that's where we all are right now, is that we have sinned, we have done wrong things. That's offensive.
Yeah.
We don't like that. I don't like hearing, hey, Chuck, that was wrong. Hey, Chuck, I don't like the way you spoke to your kids right there. Or, hey, Chuck, this or that in your life was wrong. You need to be thinking about how you're using your time. You need to be thinking about how you're doing this, how you're doing that, or whatever. We don't like hearing that, hey, there's actually things in our life that are morally wrong.
Right.
But that's where we all are. That's just the fact of the matter. All have sinned. and missed the mark, fallen short of the glory of God. Because the glory of God, the mark was perfection. And even one sin, we missed it.
Well, and that's funny that you mentioned that, because actually, this identity issue goes all the way back to Genesis. It goes all the way back to Adam and Eve. This is not like some yes. new thing. This is not some... Realistically, you know, we were talking earlier that this was a movement that started up very, very early in the 1800s or 1900s.
Yeah, a couple hundred years ago. And we're going to get into that in a little bit. But
it started back even farther back. Farther than that with Adam and Eve.
Because our modern understandings of identity can find their roots back in the 1900s.
Right.
But
it goes back even farther than that. When you go back to the Bible, you go back to Genesis, you go to Adam and Eve, and we see this identity issue even coming up in the Garden of Eden.
Yes.
Because, you know, if you guys remember, you could argue that sin, it was cursed upon this world by a lack of identity in who Eve was. Because, you know, Eve was told by Satan that if she ate the fruit, then she would be like God.
Be like God.
She would be like God. That God was lying to her, that, you know, he was trying to hide stuff from her, and that if she would just eat of the fruit, then she could be like God. And that's tempting because in comparison to God...
Genesis 3:5, and we'll throw this up on the screen in the editing. In fact, God knows that when you eat it, your eyes will be open and you will be like God, knowing good and evil. And so she saw that the tree was good for food and it was delightful to look at and it was desirable for obtaining wisdom. And so she took some of its fruit and ate it, and she also gave some to her husband who was with her. And I do want to point that, again, we're going a rabbit trail in so many directions, but I do want to point that out. I love that line that, well, I don't love it because it's a bad thing, but we often overlook that. Who was with her?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
Eve reached out and took first, but Adam wasn't doing his job. He wasn't fulfilling his identity.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't acting in his identity, in his role as husband and first created.
Yeah.
He's standing here. It says he was with her, which makes me, I look at that and I'm like, he was there for it. He didn't step in and say, oh, no, Eve, that's not what God said.
Oh, yeah, the lie was not just told to Eve. Adam was right there hearing the lie as well. And he's saying, not only she can be like God, I can be like God.
Yes.
And so they start questioning their identity. And all of a sudden, they partake of the fruit and they eat it. And they lose the sight of the identity that they already had because they had already been made in God's image.
They already
had identity in Christ. They had already been made in the image of God. And Satan comes to steal and to kill and destroy, and he lies to him and he says, you can be like God, when in reality they already were.
Mm-hmm.
But they lost vision of the identity of who they were. They wanted to be something else because they thought that they weren't, and they eat of the fruit, and all of a sudden, then we really have a lack of identity because then that separates us from God.
Mm-hmm.
And so we see this whole identity issue come up way, way, way below, you know, before the 20th century, before the 1800s, 1900s. This is the beginning of human mankind. We see a problem with identity. It all comes back
Absolutely.
To that.
Absolutely.
And so at this point, I just wanted to jump in real quick and make it very clear that we are truly indebted to another author, Carl Truman, who wrote an incredible book called The Rise and Triumph of the Modern Self. And that book has been foundational in us kind of forming a lot of these ideas and really finding some great resources and some great research on the history and the pathway of how we got to the point where we are in our current understanding of what the self is. And so now I'll send you guys back to our conversation with me and Caleb.
Absolutely. And so if you want to fast forward through human history, and which I'm not one of these people that just looks back at, a lot of people nowadays are trying to look through history truly in just either it's either oppressor or oppressed.
Right. Yeah.
And I don't buy into all that entirely, but there is obviously oppression and sin and cruelty throughout human history. And so if you fast forward, you look through all that, man, it's just, again, not recognizing that everybody is created with value. Everybody's created with worth in the image of God. Mm-hmm. So you fast forward to 18th, 19th, 20th century, but particularly in the 18th century, some writers like Jean-Jacques Rousseau. Now, a lot of people are not going to know who Rousseau is. If you're an English teacher or a literary person out there, like, you know who I'm talking about. But a lot of people don't, which is ironic because everybody buys into a lot of his ideas. Like, his ideas and things have worked their way into culture over time, and we take a lot of it for granted. So if somebody were to read him now, they're going to be like, oh, yeah, that's the... It's just like common sense to us, mm-hmm. it's, which is something part of why we have such a struggle with identity is we don't question how we got here. We don't question our culture. We just live in it. You know, it's like a fish in water. We just live in it. We've never known anything different. And so we're like, well, what about, like, why are we here? Why is this happening? Mm-hmm. And so one of the things that he really did, Rousseau really turned things inward. This was kind of the beginnings of kind of like what some historians might call psychological man.
Right.
Everything turns into how I feel. This and finding this untainted, this uncorrupted by society inner person. Nowadays, a lot of people call it their inner child. Mm-hmm. Going back, trying to find that inner child. Because the idea is that he has a stark contrast to Scripture. Scripture would teach us that because of the fall, I am born with a, like, spiritually dead, that I have a fleshly nature that is corrupt and wicked. Mm-hmm. Like, I actually have a nature, I'm going to naturally choose to sin. I don't care if you left somebody alone, if they could somehow, somebody could grow up entirely alone, away from society, they would still end up sinning against God. And he pushes back and is like, nah, I don't think that. I think we're born inherently good. That everybody's born basically good, and it's society, it's culture, and their expectations on people that have corrupted humankind. And so if there's any idea of even any kind of sin or something being morally wrong or any form of bad moral wrong behavior, it would be not being true to your inner self, not being true to just the natural you.
Right.
So that kind of gains some ground. And
you knew you was in the 1800s.
That's right, man. Back in the Rousseau was even like 1700s.
This was a hashtag way back before.
Yeah, if they'd had hashtags, it'd be, you know, hashtag you do you, get away from society. You know, I mean, it's like it was bad. And so then all of a sudden you kind of fast forward and you get to the Romantic movement, Romanticism. Mm-hmm. So a lot of poets, and they valued themselves as basically like these unspoken legislators. Like they're going to be the ones that change society. They're going to be the ones that change culture, right. Not the legislators, not the politician. They're like, it's going to be the poets. It's going to be the artists that change things. And stop me when that sounds familiar to today's culture.
I was just about to say that.
You know, it's like, but that was their thing. And so, and what do we do now? We do the same thing. Mm-hmm. Forget listening to politicians. All they want to do is squabble on this and that. We don't like them. Well, let's listen to the musicians. Let's listen to the music artists and what they're putting out, the celebrities. Now, it's not like hard and fast everybody like that. You know what I mean? Because there's a lot of celebrities that have taken flack lately for stuff they've done that's just seemed really mm-hmm. insensitive in light of pandemic and everything else. But it was this idea of the people in the arts. They're going to be the ones that change society.
Well, you could narrow that down to, and we're going to use a modern term, influencers.
Yes.
You could narrow that down to, you know, the artists, the musicians, whatever the case may be. We've narrowed that down to 21st century, say, influencers. And so this has been a topic that's actually come up, a theme that's come up for way, way, way back then. And they said it, and now we're living in it because it's happening, because they were exactly right. It's not the legislators and the politicians and the senators and the, you know, even the president and all that stuff.
Yeah, it wasn't the monarchs. It wasn't the rulers.
It's not those who are changing the culture and changing society. It's the influencers. It's social media that has created these images of identity of who you should be, what you should be, what you should wear and how you should act. And
which to me just points, just to kind of bring it into context of God, that even points me back more to a creator than anything.
Yeah.
The fact that the aesthetic value of things is there within humanity.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That makes no sense in an evolutionary framework.
Right.
In an evolutionary framework, if the top down, if you can have the strong controlling the weak, supposedly things are going to be able to progress and move forward in an evolutionary sense. But the opposite happens. You get these totalitarian regimes that try to control the people and keep them under their thumb. And what happens? The people who have that aesthetic influence, the poetry, all these things, those are the things that people cling to and will fight for. And
that changes the world. I mean,
absolutely. Absolutely. And Christians need to pursue that. Mm-hmm. Like not in a bad way, but Christians need to pursue putting out things of aesthetic value.
Right. Right.
Things of, you know, good music, putting out good artwork, you know, even in, I'm talking artwork in the sense of like sculpture, and paintings and digital artwork and whatever else, doing things.
Social media.
Social media, and even being using social media for good.
Yes, that's the whole point of what we're doing is because
that's what we're trying to do. I don't know how we're doing, but
it's not that we want to necessarily be quote unquote influencers, but it's the fact that
right.
this people listen, people watch social media, people look at social media.
Trying to meet people where they are.
Yes, we meet people where they are because people are already there, people are already on social media, and regardless of what we do, people are going to look at what's on social media, and they're going to decide for themselves whether or not, oh, I want to do something like that, I want to be something like that, I want to act like that, and that's just how it works. And so
mm-hmm.
that is why we have to navigate social media and this change in this church area, you know, as that one guy says on YouTube, you know, the biggest communication shift in 500 years. And he's right. Yeah. That's their whole model. And he absolutely killed that because it is absolutely true because the communication shift has happened. It's the biggest one in the last 500 years.
Oh, absolutely.
Because this is just the communication is different. The identities are different. Everything is different. And what are we doing to meet people where they are? And so we can, because as of right now, people look on social media and they see identity, and all these other things. Well, what happens if they're not seeing identity?
But we don't stop. We don't stop and actually stop and think about it, though.
Right.
Like, we're not consciously thinking about it. We just see, even down to advertising, modern advertising has been influenced by this. Modern advertising is like, oh, which I'm not knocking any brands or any products or whatever else, but I mean, like, I own a MacBook here, right? You know, like, all the extra hours that I worked at school this year for different stuff, that extra pay, I use part of it on this. But, like, Apple, that's what Apple does, is the market products as this is going to make you a certain kind of person.
Yeah.
And that's what advertising does. You know, it's I think of different, like, outdoor companies, outdoor products, hiking, you know, gear and things like this. Or the, what are the different hammocks, you know, that you can just throw up in the trees and stuff?
Well, I think of,
it's like they market it as, this is targeted to a certain type of person. Well, therefore, if you buy it, you're that type of person.
When you mentioned iMac, the first thing I thought of was like the AirPods, because in the commercials for the AirPods, it presents you as, oh, if you get AirPods, you're going to be a more happy person. You're going to be a more lively person because like the guy puts in the AirPods and he's going through and he's like dancing down the street and like all the colors are flying on the screen. And, like everybody around him notices that he is different and that he's changed. Mm-hmm. And, like, what's that guy doing? Because he's happy. Well,
If all your goal is to market and get products sold, it's smart marketing.
Right.
Like if we can sell our product, if we can sell, we're not selling just a product, we're selling an idea.
Yes.
That this is going to feed into your identity and make you a more fulfilled, happy person, which starting with, you know, not just starting with, but one of the first to really formalize this idea, Rousseau and those romantic poets and things, I'm thinking like Percy Shelley, you know, some of those others like that.
Mm-hmm.
Those ones you studied in high school English that you never remembered anything about. Sorry, English teacher friends. But, you know, with them is that you turn into your inner self. You turn. And so the purpose, the fulfillment of you as a person is you being authentic to your true sense of your inner self and your psychological well-being.
Mm-hmm. And if you don't, then you're harming yourself. You're harmful to
that's
your
basically
own being.
The only, in that kind of schema and that kind of thought framework, That's what sin is, is being inauthentic, being something that's damaging to yourself. And so that ultimately leads us into that, especially nowadays, that ultimate pursuit of fulfillment is that whatever my inner psychological well-being, whatever I think is going to make me happy, whatever I think is going to be most authentic to my inner self, that is what I'm going to pursue no matter the cost.
Right.
And that leads us to phrases like, I feel blah, blah, blah. Instead of going back to, and so they did away, what they tried to do, especially in the 18th and the, or I say 18th, especially like the 19th and the 20th century, they really tried to do away with the sacred order. This idea that there's transcendent truth, that there's these transcendent values, that there is a created order to things. And so you had some thinkers like Friedrich Nietzsche, I always mess his name up. He really took the Enlightenment to its like logical end. Like, hey, all you people who kind of, you just go about life practically living almost like you're an atheist. Why don't you actually go ahead and say you're an atheist? Why don't you just go ahead? You know, you've heard of the death of God. It was one of his writings and stuff. And this madman is running around like God's dead. Like talking about the consequences of like we've done away with the idea of God. Mm. And so he's like, let's try to build life and society with no basis toward like metaphysics, like the idea that the branch of philosophy that deals with like the first principles of things, like the idea of being, of knowing, of substance, like identity, ideas of time and space. It's like, let's build society and our understanding of the world without a basis in any of that.
That's hilarious. Like, how does that even work?
It doesn't. It doesn't. And so you have a lot of modern thinkers, a lot of modern authors who go back and they're analyzing these guys' like works and writings and their stuff. And they're like, no, I completely disagree. I don't think you can build, like, you have to have a metaphysical framework in some fashion, even if you hold to an evolutionary framework, you have to eventually, you can't ignore it forever. You have to come to some kind of conclusion of how is there a consciousness? How is there a mind? I'm probably going to have to edit some of this out. Like, I'm loud and spitting right now.
Well, that, because we had talked about this earlier too, is that your mind, it is an insane thought to think that your emotions control your brain.
Mm-hmm.
And your brain controls your actions of your body. Have,
like, if you look in scriptures, and one of the ones I think of is, you're going to have to help me find it because I can quote some of the words, but I don't remember the verse number. Shame on me. But he's talking about the word of God being active and alive,
Right.
Sharper than any two-edged sword.
Right.
You know, I want to say...
Dang, that's such a common verse.
I want to say it's... We're slacking. Like, I know, we are slacking. I want to say it's Ephesians, but I'm going to be wrong. So, anyways, he's talking about the word of God being alive and active and sharper than any two-edged sword. And he literally says a very interesting... I want to read it exactly so I get it exactly right. So, we finally started recording with a laptop so we can look things up. Hebrews 4:12. All right, so I'm going to pull up Hebrews 4:12 here for us. So Hebrews 4:12 says this. He says, "For the word of God is living and effective and sharper than any double-edged sword, penetrating as far as the separation," and here's the point I wanted to make, "the separation of soul and spirit." Well, that's weird. Because we use those terms interchangeably most of the time, like a lot of people do. Is like, and so like in the scriptures, and I don't want to pull from just one verse. There's kind of other areas in the scriptures. The idea of the soul is also kind of what it talks about as the heart. It's like the seat of your emotions, your will, your consciousness.
Right.
And so somehow yours, and then your spirit would be like that portion that is made to be like God, that is actually dead before salvation.
Right.
That needs to be made alive.
Right.
And so that spirit needs to be completely remade. It needs to be regenerated so that it's pure, that it's holy, that it's perfect, made like God again. And your soul, again, would be like that consciousness. You go back to the Old Testament, the Hebrew scriptures, and one of the words used for kind of soul back there, like nefesh, this like breath of God life, the nefesh. Animals have that. Not just people, but animals don't have spirit like us.
Right.
They have a consciousness. They have the breath of life in them.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of what that is. And then, of course, they have a physical body just like we do. But without that breath of life, without that nefesh kind of like spirit inside of the soul inside of them, this body's nothing.
Right. And that's
that union of the consciousness with your brain.
Right. Well, that's the you saying with the animals. Like, that is kind of cool because you do see that how you can take an animal completely out of the environment as a young baby animal, you can take it completely out of the environment that it would have normally been raised in, but it will have actions that would portray itself as if it were. I mean, we have cats, and they didn't have a mom. They weren't raised around a mom to teach them how to hunt and to kill and all this other stuff.
Yeah.
They get fed every single day. They don't need to hunt for their own food.
And yet they bring dead mice.
But yeah, they bring dead mice. They're all the time hunting and being very, very agile and sneaky. Exactly the type of things that they would have needed if they were just been out in the wild somewhere living on their own.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just instinctively, intuitively
a
cognitive, they can have that conscious to be able to build up themselves.
There has to be a bit of a room in your understanding, in your worldview, for a metaphysical framework somehow. Yep. But, you know, Nietzsche was like, no, let's do away with that. Karl Marx, I know we've heard of Marx. We talk about Marxist organizations today. You know, in fact, you can go to Black Lives Matter as an organization, go to their website, and one of their main points is that they Marxism. Mm-hmm. And that comes from Karl Marx. And so he saw religion as the opium of the masses, was one of the ways that he wrote that. And to be fair, he was kind of saying that, like, okay, that maybe kind of has its value for dealing with suffering in life and different things. But he also saw this way that people could be controlled. So he called it the opium of the masses. And so he ultimately saw it as weakness. And then finally in that century, you had Darwin. Charles Darwin put forth the theory of evolution. And so what he did with that, I'm a science teacher. I find a lot of scientific flaws with some of Darwin's thinking. I've studied these things. Now, granted, I'm not like a PhD scientist, but there are hundreds and thousands of world-renowned PhD scientists who actually reject Darwinism.
Yeah.
But what Darwin did was he put it in terms that the average person could really understand. So it was this idea that we're going to give it a scientific stamp of approval, but we're going to put it in terms that the common person can kind of understand and share. And so Darwin's ideas of evolution, what that does then, that gives you, if true, it forms a theory that if true, it takes away the need for God in the minds of its proponents. If everything could have come from prior existing life forms or whatever, this and that, and it all came about by random chance, we don't really need God for that in their minds. To which, again, I would say you have to make room for, again, I'm going to use a big fancy word, metaphysics, the idea of, okay, first causes, where does everything come from? Even if it were possible that everything originated from one initial random cell that got produced on the earth somehow, mm-hmm. where'd all that stuff come from?
Right, where did it come
Where's the beginning? How does a universe form itself from nothing? How does a universe create itself from nothing? There has to be a first cause. And for the Christian worldview, that would be God. He's the uncreated initial cause of everything else. Well, how do you answer that? So, but Darwin put it in terms that it made it popular, kind of spread through pop culture. Right. And so we find ourselves then moving into the previous century from our current century, right? The 20th century. And a lot of things by that point had been influenced by Sigmund Freud. And so Freud takes everything. He takes a lot of these ideas and stuff, and he sexualizes them, that people are sexual from birth. Not in the sense of necessarily, like, you know, they're going to be, like, sexually aroused as a baby or whatever, but that he put everything in terms of sexual identity. And while a lot of people, especially people even in psychology, have gone away from a lot of Freudian theories and stuff, that one has seemed to have stuck because – for him and for people today, this is kind of how we understand a lot of these things. For him, what was more fulfilling and more pleasure-inducing than sexual satisfaction? He saw it as like the greatest driving force of human nature over everything. Mm-hmm. Now, I would argue that that's not necessarily true. It's powerful.
I would argue that that's not true as well.
That's powerful driving force.
But as a society, that he came up with that sort of theory, I would say – if that was his goal, was to try to get that to stick, then he did that perfectly well at timing, because with our society within the 20th century, that was really when that really started kicking up, is like sex became the norm, like sexual identity, not just sexual identity, but just like sex, porn. I mean, it all blew up in that culture.
A lot of people, a lot of historians and people back then would say, okay, a culture's kind of known more, not necessarily what it's for, but what it's against. Mm-hmm. A lot of ways you can identify culture is by what is regarded as taboo. And so then, again, Freud makes everything sexual in nature. And so it's like, okay, well, our culture is really defined by what is considered sexual taboo.
Right.
What's sexually not acceptable behavior or whatever. And so that really brings us kind of – I know that was a lot more in-depth and a lot more kind of academic type thing than what we normally do on the podcast. But I think it was kind of important for us to kind of understand that's how we got to where we're at. Mm-hmm. And so now we look and we're like, okay, I want to form my own identity. So it's my inner sense of well-being. That's not a new thing. As we said, that was not new to the 60s. That was not a new thing in the last century.
Well, the reason why it's good to have the educational purpose of that and the history purposes of that is because a lot of people get the wrong idea of sexual identity and just identity in general and thinking, oh, well, that's just something we've, this is just, how has this never been thought of? Oh, we've thought of it now. And so it's just, it's this big like new thing.
Progressivism.
Like, yeah. And so, but it's like, whenever you put the history behind it, then you realize like,
oh, this ain't new.
Yeah. This ain't something that's just new and just crazy and big. Like this was like theorized, planned out by different individuals that had ideas.
Now
that
they wouldn't
grew.
100% agree with everything in the modern sense of it, but the core basis of it has come from, those are the roots of it.
Yep.
And so when we, to really kind of jump into some identity, well, okay, so if identity is not necessarily something that I get to just make for myself, like where does identity come from? Mm-hmm. Like where does identity come from? And so one of those things that I think identity is really deeply rooted in relationships.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's really
whether we want it to or not, whether we like it or not. We like to think of our modern selves as in I'm a self-made man. I can do whatever I want. I can be who I want to be, this and that. But I challenge you, and I challenge listeners, anybody that's listening to this, try to think of any identity out there and not be able to relate it to the relationships. Mm-hmm. So, okay, so somebody decides they want to say that, you know, if I'm a man and I'm like, okay, I'm gay. Okay, I'm homosexual, I'm gay. That's my identity. That's how I self-identify. That's this and that, whatever else. Okay, well, that's in relation to other people. Mm-hmm. That's a sexual preference in relation to other people. Even if somebody is not acting on that, it's still in relation to other people. If somebody, you know, says, and this is something, you know, a few generations ago, the idea that somebody could say, well, I was born, a man, but I really feel like a woman on the inside. I'm really a woman. Mm-hmm. That wouldn't have made sense to them. But tell me you can't find anybody on the street now and say, oh yeah, here's my friend or whatever. You know, they were born a man, but they're actually a woman. They identify as a woman, and whether they agree with it or not, the idea of it makes sense. Like they understand what you're talking about,
right?
Because we're at that point now where we think, okay, we think identity comes from purely within. And I would argue that there are aspects, again, that kind of metaphysical understanding of things, that there are aspects of our nature, our personalities that are even there almost at birth. That are given by God. And so, but that doesn't mean that we can, you know, that doesn't mean that we can just do whatever we want. And so even if I'm naturally drawn to a particular thing or whatever else, nothing like that is ever going to be, nothing given by God, nothing given by the Holy Spirit is ever going to be in conflict with His word though. So that the argument that, and again, I wouldn't say that we're experts on this by any means or anything, but we've had conversations with people, we've listened to people, but this, you know, like the idea that, oh, I was just born this way, whatever it was. Well, you could make an argument that you were born a certain way, given a certain set of characteristics or whatever, but again, God's not going to give you something that's in conflict with His word. Mm-hmm. He spoke it. He's not going to disagree with Himself.
Well, and it's kind of crazy to see how society has and can influence what we think is identity or what could be identity, because you know, I even think it is a little bit scary to think, you know, what I think about myself. I'm like, what if I had grown up what if I was a 4, 5, 6 year old kid in today's generation rather than the generation that I was growing up in? Because I didn't like football. Mm-hmm. I wasn't even, especially in like kindergarten, pre-K, first, second grade, third grade, stuff like that. I wasn't big into sports. I mean, I know kids now, I mean, they can recite every, and they're like in kindergarten, they can recite every football player's name, you know, and I'm like, that's just crazy.
I know, yeah.
But I wasn't into that stuff. I wasn't into football. Dude, I remember I used to play Barbie doll with all the girls back in kindergarten.
Well, your sisters were older.
I had two sisters, yeah. I grew
so
up with
I'm
two
married
sisters.
To one of them, by the way.
Yes, he is. But I grew up older. With two older sisters. And so whenever I was all the time doing their stunt dummy, whenever because they both did cheerleading.
Mm-hmm.
And so all the cheerleaders would come over to the house, and they would be doing stunts. Hey, guess who would be throwing them in there with them? I could do cartwheels and backflips and front flips. By the time I was really, really small, I was really good at gymnastics, actually, which is ironic, which is weird. But I was really good at gymnastics, and I loved playing with the Barbie dolls, with the girls. Whenever all the guys were hanging out in kindergarten, you know, I was over there with the girls on the kitchen sets playing like I was cooking and stuff, because I loved the thought of cooking and baking and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
He still likes
to cook.
And I still like to cook. I love cooking, man. I think it's awesome. But, or baking or whatever. But where it, the generation that I grew up in, that was never questioned. It was like, oh, okay, well, he just likes doing that stuff, you know, whatever, that's fine, mm-hmm. you know, whatever.
It wasn't as much of a thing.
No, it wasn't much thing. And I grew up, and you know what? I'm just as much of a manly man as anybody else. I love hunting. I love fishing. I do more manly stuff than half of the men out there, you know. But I look back and I think, what if I'd grown up in this generation where if somebody had seen me doing
somebody's
that,
questioning, like, he's a normal boy. He just likes doing things a little different than some of the others. Nowadays, they might look and say,
yeah, if my teachers or if the people that I was around or that had seen me was like, oh, okay, well, he likes playing with some Barbie dolls, or he likes cooking, or he doesn't hang out with the guys much. He doesn't talk about football or whatever that case may be.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't like the WWE wrestlers and stuff. He likes playing with Barbie
dolls. I never
dolls
liked wrestling. Whatever. Sorry, everybody listening.
I didn't either. But
so
it's
upset.
Like,
I didn't like wrestling.
If I had grown up in today's generation, I wonder how different that would have – society would have had impact on me, because mm-hmm. they would have labeled me as something that I wasn't.
Yes.
Because I never questioned if I was a man or a woman
and
or
the kids like that like run that. The risk of being told.
And I'm not,
and that pushed on them by society that maybe you're not really a boy.
Yeah, and I'm not trying to sit here and say that I know what it feels like to be labeled as something I'm not or anything like that. I'm just saying, like,
mm-hmm.
what would society have had a different impact on me if I was raised in today's generation, where if somebody looked at me and saw the things that I like doing and said, oh, okay, well, that's not what young boys are supposed to do. That's not
right.
what young boys are supposed to do.
Right.
And all of a sudden, they're going to start putting labels in my head thinking, oh, well, maybe you're not meant to be a boy. Maybe you're meant to be a girl because
mm-hmm.
you like playing with Barbies, or you like cooking on a or baking or whatever the case may be. And it's like, that's
but again,
totally
it all comes back to we're largely identified by relationships, how we choose to relate to other people.
Right.
You know, largely by that. And we have part of what drives that. Is we also not only do we feel this need that I need to have words to express my identity, I need to have some kind of understanding of who I am, but then I also need to belong. Mm. I also need to be accepted by somebody in that identity. And so it puts that pressure on people. Well, man, he likes playing with Barbie dolls, or he likes cooking or doing this or that, whatever. And so it puts pressure on you to find somewhere that you fit in,
mm-hmm.
somewhere that's going to accept you like that. Well, there ought to be a place that accepts you and says, oh, yeah, he's totally a dude. He just likes these things.
Right.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
Right.
You know, but what happens is they don't find that in a certain place. And so then people are pushed toward another group that are saying, oh, yeah, well, come be a part of us. Come belong with us. You must be gay. Come be a part of our community.
Right, right. We'll accept you how you are
yeah.
here. I mean, they're...
And on the one hand, to an extent, I applaud them for that,
right.
for trying to say, we're not going to put limitations on you based on what you want to do or your past or this and that. In many regards, the church ought to show enough grace
right.
that people can say, well, you know what? They have some different views than I do, but they just love me so well. I want to be with them.
Mm-hmm.
But the church, we fail at that a lot of times. And so we have that innate sense that we need to belong and be confirmed. And like we were saying earlier, it's not enough for me to say, this is what I believe my identity is. This is what my purpose is. But you need to affirm it and you need to agree with
right.
it. Don't you dare disagree with it. Even if you're – we've changed the definition of tolerance.
Right, yeah.
Tolerance is not you agree with me. Like by definition, tolerance is you disagree,
mm-hmm.
but you're going to tolerate it.
Right.
We've changed it. No, you need to agree with me.
Right.
And so that makes things a lot harder. But ultimately, here's where I want to kind of bring it all and kind of move us toward the scriptures.
Well, and before you do that, I mean, I just want to say, like, this is one of the reasons why we had thought about actually doing like the identity thing as kind of like a short series, maybe
mm-hmm.
doing it in some of our mini talks or something like that, just splitting it into a couple mini talks. But we had then decided, you know, we want to do this in one big episode, one big podcast. And one of the reasons why I really want to do that is because I think is, you know, I mean, obviously identity is a huge deal. It is a huge factor that plays in our society and our culture and things like that, and into individual people's lives. But identity has played a huge role even in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to be able to mention that because one of the favorite things that I like doing as being saved, as being a Christian, I love being able to talk about me. Okay? You know, that's not, you know, I mean, that may be conceited or whatever the case may be, but like, Jesus has moved in me. Jesus has worked in me.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to tell people about it. Okay? I like telling people about it whenever and however I can. And so when we talk about identity, the sexual aspect or anything like that, like I said in the beginning, there's many different forms of identity. Mm-hmm. And a big identity that played a role in me is I remember when I went into middle school, going into the high school range, I'd always been labeled with this nickname, Fidget. And I'd kind of, it's funny to say, because when I was in the fourth grade, I had this teacher that I would always jump up and down for lunch, man, because I was just so excited because, you know, I love
food. It's lunch, right? I love food. Caleb, yeah, lunch, Caleb was hardcore, like, crushing on the cafeteria lady's food.
I was, dude. I love the cafeteria food. That's so weird. But, man,
like,
I
told his mama,
it.
Like, I wish, and he was young and didn't know much better, but he was like, I wish you cook like the cafeteria ladies.
I did. And so I was always so excited for lunch, in which I got ADHD. You know, I went to the doctor. I've taken some medications for it in the past, but which I don't like taking. But I'm an energetic kid. I am a living fidget, okay? And so that is what I got the nickname in fourth grade, a fidget. And so if you know me, if you've ever heard of me, like, you know me by Fidget. Like, people, I tell people my real name. If you're from around here, I tell people my real name, and they're like, who are you? I don't even know you. I'm like, Fidget. And they're like, oh, yeah, that guy. Yeah, I know him. Yeah, whatever the case might be. Like, that's just what I'm known as around here. And so from the fourth grade and up in middle school, and especially into high school, I'd kind of used Fidget as kind of like this identity that I could, like, set back on and be somebody else that I wasn't. And so that
is like, all right, people are saying this, let's just roll with it.
Yeah. Because it was, my name is Caleb Jeffers. And, like, as a kid, man, I was the most honest and truthful person, a kid, like, I'm pretty sure, like, ever existed, man. I mean, even if it hurt me, I remember there was so many times, there was a fight out on recess one time with some kids, and, like, I knew, like, if I tattletale, I'm gonna get beat up. But the teachers knew, hey, if you go to Caleb Jeffers and ask him, he will tell you, and he won't lie to you.
Yeah.
And so they went to me, and they would ask me, and I would tell them, and I don't care, you know, if I got my butt kicked or whatever on the next recess day or whatever the case may be, or bullied or whatever the case may be, I told the truth, man. That's just who I was. That's how I was. And that was Caleb Jeffers, okay? So then I move into high school, and it's like, then all of a sudden, Fidget kind of starts to take over. I know, like, it's not like I had, like, some dual personality disorder, but it's almost like I was living by two different identities.
No, that's what people do. That's what we do.
And I created this false identity of, okay, well, Caleb Jeffers, he is the really nice kid. He's the godly kid that grew up in church, that his parents raised him to love the Lord and to know right from wrong and to want to do things for the Lord. Fidget is the cool guy. He's the popular guy, because I wasn't, you know, in middle school and stuff like that, I wasn't a popular kid. You go to high school, everybody knows me. I mean, I know elementary school people that know who Fidget is, okay? And it's like, I've never even met you before, and they know who Fidget is. And it's because I craved, like, that popularity, like, wanting in with the cool crowd, wanting to know people who I was.
And need to belong.
Needing to belong, needing to fit somewhere, and I didn't feel like I fit anywhere. But Fidget fit places. Fidget had friends. Fidget had a lot of places he could fit and belong in. And so
it really
makes
me think of our episode we did just a couple weeks ago with Randy Birch. You know, and Randy talking about that shift, that change in the way he talked, the way he acted and everything once he got on drugs and was in with the party crowd. It was all of a sudden there's party Randy who can talk to whoever, who's smooth talking, who does all this stuff. Whereas Randy before that, not so much.
Exactly.
It was different. And I feel like I did that to an extent in college.
Yeah.
Because it was like, okay, cool. So it's like, I've grown up my whole life in a small town, not a big county. Like, land-wise, it's a big county, but we probably have a population of 22,000, roughly. Totally good, yeah. You know, went to a high school of around 400. It fluctuated a little bit, but around 400 kids. And so now there's this chance to go to school at Tennessee Tech in Cookeville, Tennessee, where nobody knows me, unless it's somebody that came from back home to go to Tech. It's a chance to meet new people and everything. And I wasn't that cool kid. I wasn't, like, the popular kid in high school. Played sports and stuff, but was, you know, was valedictorian, was kind of, you know, nerdy and this, that, or whatever. And same thing. It was like, oh, I get a chance now to be whoever I want.
Yeah.
Like, I get a chance if I want to put on a little more bravado and act different or whatever, like, I can do that. And I did that for a bit, but same thing. Man, I just felt empty.
Yeah.
Like, it was just like, and I, you know, and, like, I wasn't even, like, going out partying with it or anything. Like, it, but it was just this sense of, man, I'm like, there's a difference in trying to, like, I think it's good for somebody who can be very introverted to try to open up more and get used to talking to people and having more relationships and having more conversation. But there's a difference in that and me trying to be fake, be somebody that I'm truly not.
And I understand that, because that's like, And I've moved past that, but at the same time, it's like, I remember actually, this was not long ago, this was a couple of years ago, when I actually set like the whole family down, because even, like, my mom calls me fidget, even. I mean, everybody, literally everybody I know, mm-hmm. my family, everybody calls me fidget. And there got to a, it got to a point there where, like, I remember setting the whole family down, and I was like, I don't want to be called fidget anymore. I was like, please don't call me fidget anymore. I was like, this is not, fidget is a guy that I created, it was an identity that I created to be everything that God did not want me to be. And I don't want to be that anymore, because I want to be Caleb Jeffers. I want to be servant of Christ. I want to be Caleb servant of Christ. I want to be Caleb, the guy who loves Jesus. I want to be Caleb, the guy who shares his story to everybody that he knows, and the guy who shares the gospel. That's who I want to be, and I want to get back to that. So I was like, I don't want to be called, you know, Caleb anymore. And so it's not like I get mad at anybody who called me fidget, but it's like I got people that still come up from my pastor and like, you know, oh, hey, fidget, whatever you're doing. And like every time they do it, like it honestly,
like a cringe.
It makes me cringe, man. I mean, it is just like it hurts, man, because it's like I hate that person, that identity that I created in high school. And it's like, I wish so bad I could go back and like change that, but I can't. But that's okay, because I'm a new creation and I'm no longer fidget. I'm Caleb Jeffers, who loves Christ.
Well, and the thing about that is, you take it and you run with it, because you realize it's something that, oh, people are accepting of this for whatever reason. Yeah. You take it and you run with it. But again, it ultimately comes from you. And so who does it glorify?
Right.
If it comes from me, then I'm glorifying myself. If it comes from me, it glorifies me. If my purpose and my identity come from God, then they're going to, my identity will inform and align with my God-given purpose.
Right.
And ultimately, he will get the glory for it. And that's the tough thing. And so I do want to, and if you got more of your story or anything else you want to add, I want to bring it to some scripture. Because I want to be very clear. We are lovingly saying that we want to push back and offer an alternative to you do you, you find your inner child, you find your inner self. I mean, I hear people say, even people, and I get what they're saying with it, but people who are like, oh yeah, I became a husband and a dad and I feel like I lost myself, or I became a wife and a mom and I just feel like I've lost myself and all that. And it's like, I totally get what you mean. But I would push back on that, because I've been there myself, and I would say, well, what was I basing my identity on then? What was my identity based in if I feel like I've lost myself because I've became a father and can't take my wife out on a date and do whatever I want on Friday night now?
Yeah, that's good.
What was I basing my identity on? And I think, and that's the thing that I think I want to push back on, that, because when we rest in that identity in Christ, and that's what it brings, is rest.
Yep.
Still brings heartache, still brings confusion and suffering sometimes, in the sense of those things are just going to naturally come from life. But they won't come from your identity itself. Like, those things will still come, but your identity offers you the realization and the rest of, you know what, I don't have to figure it out. Like, I don't have to mentally figure out who I am. I don't have to mentally figure this out or figure out how it's going to work out. I just have to show up and be present with Jesus.
Well, and that's the whole point, is that God doesn't change. Okay, mm-hmm. God is who he's always been. He's who he always has been, and he's who he always will be.
And he won't change who he says you are.
He never will, okay? And so when we pursue our identity in Christ, that is something that we can build something off of. But it's just like, I think of, if I was to say, okay, well, I'm a bodybuilder, powerlifter, whatever. I like going to the gym, or I'm a CrossFit, or whatever the case may be. I love going to the gym. And there are times in my life when I'm super good about meal prep and all that stuff. I go to the gym every day. I'm very, very, very critique about it. But at the same time, there are times when my family, or when the podcast, or when church stuff comes up, and I can't go to the gym like I normally do, and I don't give as much time to it.
Mm-hmm.
So all of a sudden, it's like, oh man, like I kind of feel a little bit lost this week or last week, because I've not been going to the gym. I've not been doing something that I'm normally doing. All of a sudden, it's like, oh, you know what? I may have been putting a little bit too much of my identity in the gym, or
I wasn't somebody that spent 6 days a week in the gym, but when I had a gym membership, I used it for a long time. And then when it got busy and I literally couldn't, because of the demands of family life and everything, there's a reckoning that has to happen. It's like, as much as I love this, as much as – maybe I shouldn't even use the word love. I feel like we overuse the word love nowadays too. But as much as I really enjoy this and get pleasure out of it and enjoy going to the gym, I'm placing too much of my identity in being the fit guy.
Yeah.
I'm placing too much of my identity in being the guy that people look at and be like, oh man, he's disciplined.
Yeah, well, and it's especially because like when I like whenever I you know think about the gym and stuff, I do it. I bring my meals to work every single day. Like it's like an all day thing. It's like when you go to the gym, it's not just that hour gym session that you're in there. It's an all day thing because I'm like, okay, I got to eat. I do my yogurt at 9:30 with my creatine. I do 11:30. I'm taking.
See, I never even got that into it. Yeah, and it was taking, still too important for me.
I'm taking my protein shake and I eat my chicken and rice at 10:30. At 1:30, I eat my turkey and my rice. At 3:30, I'm eating something else or whatever the case may be.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm on a system and I do that every
single
day.
I did it
day.
So that I could eat whatever and not have to worry about it.
But that's how I do it. So it's like, but whenever I don't do that, it's like, because where you spread that out through that becomes your entire day. Yeah, and so when all of a sudden you take that out of it, it's like, oh my goodness.
So much mental capacity to think your way and prepare and do those things.
But that changes your bodybuilding, CrossFitting, all these things that we put in our lives, your job, when all of a sudden it's like, oh, I work 60 hours a week. You take pride in, oh man, I'm such a hard worker. I work 60 hours a week.
Well, I wasn't even confident in my basketball ability in high school.
Right.
Like I doubted myself so bad, like could have performed so much better, but I was always in my own head, like couldn't do it. Just could not perform well on a consistent basis. Could have been so much better. And even that was a point of pride or a point of identity for me of like, oh, I'm good at basketball. Like I'm somebody who's really good at basketball.
And after that stops, what happens?
Who finds joy and passion in it. Well, it's gone. You graduate high school, it's gone. I could have gone and tried to walk on somewhere, but again, I had academic scholarships to take. Like, why would I throw that away? Just to go somewhere else where I'm not going to get as much scholarship money, just to try to be able to play ball for a little bit longer.
Right, yeah.
You know, and so it's that shifting. And so we've placed identity in all of these things. And.
But that's why we need our identity.
But that changes.
That doesn't change.
If I've got part of my identity is wrapped up in being known as somebody who's athletic. Mm. What if I'm in a car accident and I'm a quadriplegic?
Yeah.
My whole identity is gone if that's what it was based on.
Yep.
You know, and
or your job, and you lose your job, or whatever. I mean, or your sport, and all of a sudden you graduate high school. There are a million different things: your career, your college, whatever the case may be. There's a million different things that we can pour our identities into. Mm-hmm.
We elevate, and again, our culture likes to elevate sexuality into that sphere. But when we come to the scriptures, and I read, and we're gonna read some. I'm gonna let Caleb read some. When we come to the scriptures, I look at something like John 1:12. Yet to all who did receive him. Talking about Jesus, all who received him. And that receive means to those who believed in his name. This is a surrender of self to him. This is not just a, oh, Jesus, come and I'll fit you into my life and receive you. This means a complete shift, a complete reorienting of priorities. He gave the right to become children of God. Mm. That is the identity of the believer, is a child of God. Now, for a lot of us, a lot of people that I talk to, especially younger generations and in my generation, that's a hard concept. It's a little bit of a hard sell because they may not have had a good experience of. They may not have wanted to be known by as a child of whoever their parents were, because maybe dad ran off and left, and they don't want people to know who their dad is, or maybe mom's an alcoholic and they want people to know who mom is. But God is different than that. Mm-hmm. God's a good father. God's a father who's perfect, who will show us what it means to be a true father. And he says, I give you the right to become my child with all the perks and benefits of that identity. But we still are striving. All the pressure, we're putting the pressure on ourselves to form our own identity and to figure it out when God says, no, I got it for you right here. I've got it for you. I'll give you your identity. I'll tell you what it is. And you're going to live it. And when you fully embrace it, you're going to love it. It's going to be what's best for you. But we push back so hard because we want our way. We want to be the master of our own fate, you know. So, like that, John, you know, gave them the right to become children of God. And I think of, again, that idea of God as a father, Ephesians 1:5, he predestined us for adoption to sonship. Sonship. So, not only are we somebody who's a child of God, we're not just random. It's like my wife and I chose to have kids, but it's not like we get to choose specifically which kids we got. You know what I mean? And I love my kids, and I wouldn't trade them. But I think a big part of that is just the fact that they're mine.
Yeah.
Like I haven't known anything different. Like they're my kids, and I would never trade them. no matter how great somebody else's kids look. Mm-hmm. I would never trade my kids. But God chose us when we didn't look good.
Yeah.
We were predestined for adoption to sonship through Jesus Christ. So he says, you who are not my child, I'm going to make you my child by his own decision. If that doesn't make you feel good and affirm you in your identity, I don't know what will.
Well, that's Christ changes us. Okay, and we talk about that a lot on the podcast. Whenever you're saved, you are made a new creation. You're something different. You are completely changed from who you used to be, from the identity that you used to associate with, from the identities that you used to associate with. Christ gives you a new identity, and we see that in 2 Corinthians 5:17. He says, therefore, if anyone is in Christ, he's a new creation. The old has passed away, and see, the new has come. And so God says, hey, if you've accepted Christ in your heart, if you know me, he's like, I've given you a new identity. I've given you something completely new that is of Christ, that is of me, that is not of yourself, that is not of this world that can be changed or that can be manipulated or can be passed away. He says, I'm going to give you something that's eternal and that's holy and that never changes. I'm going to give you an identity
that can't be altered just because somebody else views you a different way.
Exactly. And that even brings us into the next verse, which is Romans 12:1-2. It says, therefore, brothers and sisters, in view of the mercies of God, I urge you to present your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God. This is your true worship. Do not be conformed to this age, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind so that you may discern what is good, pleasing, and the perfect will of God.
And I hear people talk about this, and even people who would be, you know, again, what we might call progressive Christianity, or somebody who is saying, no, God's cool with my homosexuality, or God's cool with me finding my identity in the gym, or God's cool with me finding, like, I'm going to fit God into what I'm doing, that they were talking about, you know, trying to feel what they thought would be most pleasing to God. They feel what would be glorifying to God. One I'd even heard in an interview that I watched, you know, saying that it was a woman who had undergone hormone treatments and things to look more like a man. And she was saying that she felt like, because of her inner essence, her true sense of inner self, she felt like her being that way was the most pleasing to God. And her living as a man. And it's like, but Paul lays it out for us right there in Romans 12. He's like, no. You have to be transformed. You have to be transformed by the renewing of your mind so that you can discern what's the acceptable and pleasing and perfect will of God.
Yeah, and I mean, I actually heard a story about a guy that was, he used to live in a homosexual lifestyle. And he had come to know Christ, and basically his thing, and he's a big TikTok guy that goes on there and preaches to these people, which I think what he's doing is a pretty good thing, because that's a big topic of social media right now. But he goes on there and he's like, hey, Christ has changed me. I used to live in this homosexual lifestyle of sin. And he's like, guess what? He's like, I still have urges. I still have temptations. He's like, I still struggle with wanting to look at other men and wanting to, you know, be with other men, these homosexual activities. I still struggle with these things. But he's like, I do not act upon these things in no way, form, or fashion. And he actually mentions this verse and saying, I'm being transformed by the renewing of my mind. He says, God is transforming me. He's, you know, I got these pathways in my head.
Which is a thing that transcends any temptation. Like, you have people, just because, okay, but people want to hold him up and make him worse somehow because it's homosexual temptation for him. But what about the married man who's dealing with heterosexual temptation?
Yeah.
He's got to be renewed in his mind too, that I'm not going to look at other women. I'm only going to look at my wife. I'm not going to look at pornography.
Oh, yeah, pornography.
I'm only going to be focused on my wife.
Gambling. Yes. I mean, there's alcoholism. Everything. I mean, there's a million different things that the exact same thing could be applied to. And so it's, for some reason, as a culture, even as Christians, we have put homosexuality
and
up
I
on
think
a pedestal
it goes
of
back,
just sin. And it's like,
I think part of it goes back to, again, that sexualizing of identity. Thanks to Freud and other influences that have influenced our culture, is that idea of we have elevated our sexuality to the point of that's the fullness of who we
and
are
I
as
understand,
people.
I understand that's a big thing of our culture right now, but that doesn't mean that it's a bigger thing in the sin. Okay?
Right.
Just because it's big and it's relevant and it's concerning to the culture right now does not mean that it is bigger or some sort of worse dynamic of sin than your alcoholism or your pornography or your adultery or whatever the case may be.
Yep.
It is in the list with all of them, okay? And it's all sinful and it's all wrong. We all have to be made aware of that, but we also know it doesn't come overnight. Okay, there is sanctification. No, yeah.
Salvation is instantaneous. The moment you surrender to Jesus, you are saved. You are His forever.
Yeah.
And your new identity that your spirit has, and it says that the Holy Spirit will bear witness to your spirit that you are, we are His children. Yeah. That your new spirit, your new, you, that new creation that you are, no longer has the identity of sinner. Mm-hmm. Now you have the identity of child of God. But yet you're still in the same body. You're still in the, you still have the same brain that had the literally those neural pathways that literally had the brain cells wired in those previous thought patterns. So salvation is instantaneous, but that continual sanctification process that we've talked about before, like with Cal in an episode, we talked about sanctification. It's a big word, not many people use it as much anymore, but that sanctification of our actions and our habits and things become more Christ-like.
Yes, the you're more becoming time, more like God.
But you know what it flows from? It flows from being gifted a new identity.
Yes.
The more time we spend with Jesus realizing that our new identity, the more it's going to show forth in our lives.
Sanctification does not inherently bring salvation. Salvation brings sanctification.
Yeah. Salvation starts you on that process. Yeah.
Yes. And so you accept Christ. It's not a, okay, you're saved. I am never going to want to look at porn again. I am never going to struggle again. I'm never going to have a desire to to do homosexual activities. I am never going to have a desire to be a glutton or, you know, what alcohol or whatever the case may be. It's not that, okay, I'm never going to be able to struggle with this again. It's, hey, I'm saved. I'm a new creation. Starting today, I'm starting the war against my sin. I'm starting the war against whatever this thing is that I've been living, whatever this thing is that I've created my identity to be. That's when the war starts, is on that day. And then throughout that, that is that sanctification where we become, it becomes more clear. It gets easier. It gets, you develop a tolerance to saying no to the sin. And last one right here, Galatians 2:20, I've been crucified with Christ.
Oh, that's why I was about to go there.
I no longer live, but Christ lives in me.
Mm-hmm.
The life I now live in the body, I live by faith in the Son of God who loved me and gave himself for me.
And Paul would say elsewhere, he's going to say, all right, cool. If you've been raised with Christ, then seek the things that are above.
Mm.
And again, that comes from having a new identity. And so I hope that this has kind of helped give us some ideas of how we got to where we're at, to where we think that my identity comes from within me, that it's something inherent to me and it's my job to figure it out, or that it's my job to make it, because it's not.
Yeah.
Now, you can try to live that way. You can try to do that, and you are going to come up so empty. You can try to live that way, but there's going to be so much pressure on you. Once I decide that this is going to be the identity I pursue, if I decide I want to do something different that doesn't fulfill me, then I'm going to be labeled a fake. All the pressure is put on me to keep up with whatever I set my mind to at first.
Yeah.
Whereas Jesus says, okay, instead of having to search, instead of having to find it, instead of having to create it and upkeep it and sustain it yourself, I got this identity for you. That's better than anything else you're going to make up on your own. That's better for you. That's going to be more fulfilling. That ultimately only comes by surrender to me.
Yeah.
That only comes by surrender to Jesus as the Son of God, as the substitution for us, because we couldn't pay the debt of our sin. And he says, it's going to fulfill you. It's going to make you new. And it's eternally going to put you in my presence.
Yeah.
And so I hope and I pray that there's been something helpful in all of this. At times I feel like I've just gabbed and gabbed on, but man, it was encouraging to me just to even hear Caleb talk about himself and his testimony and just the personal side of things, you know, and I hope that helps other people and hope it helps you. So guys, thanks for listening. Thanks for sticking with us if you're still here at the end, and I hope that you will reach out to us. You can leave us a message on our Anchor page. You can leave us a message on our social media. We're on Facebook, Instagram, now TikTok.
Yep. Email us, crosswalk.
Email crosswalk.faith@gmail.com. We're on there as Crosswalk, or you can reach out to me, Chuck Jeffers, or Caleb Jeffers. Reach out to us if you get ideas, if you want to chat with us or anything. We're also looking for opportunities to serve you guys in the community. We'll come clean up trees out of your yard from the recent storms. Looking to maybe Help some folks out doing giving away coins for free laundry, whatever. We're coming up with ideas. If you got ideas of things, needs you see in the community, let us know. We want to serve.
If you see a need in the community for as far as ministry aspects, we are we've got a group of guys that are hands-on and ready to go that we have decided to start up some of these ministry activities. So if you guys got some ideas or you guys see a need in the community, then let us know because we have the hands ready to go and serve. So thank you guys for listening in. I hope you guys enjoyed the episode. This is Crosswalk. Join us back.